was really tempted to use a clip this morning because the clip would fit so well with what I'm going to talk about. If you've seen Jaws, and I imagine a lot of people have by now, 40 years after it was made, you remember the scene where Quinn and Hooper start to compare their scars, you know, the ones on their arm and finally the ones on their legs, and they're just all the encounters that they've had with the sharks and how the sharks have just literally eaten them up, if you want to say it that way. And there's poor old Brody over there with an appendectomy scar, you know. He can't be in the contest at all. Paul tells us that he bears in his body the marks of being a Christian. Now, when you get to heaven, and I know we'll have new bodies, but when you get to heaven, you wouldn't want to get into a scar contest with Paul. Paul has infinite damage. He puts at the very end of the epistle that he writes to the Galatians, "Finally, let no one cause me trouble, for I bear on my body the marks of Jesus." On my body are the marks. Well, what's he talking about here? And a lot of times when we bring this up, people say, oh, I know, it's 2 Corinthians chapter 11. And go over there with me. 2 Corinthians 11, starting in verse 23. Are they servants of Christ? Talking about the Jewish people who were causing him trouble. And then parenthetically, he says, I'm out of my mind to talk like this. I am more. I have worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, and been exposed to death again and again. He gives us this overview of all the things he's suffered. And then he's going to tell us very specifically what's happened to him. 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. Think about all of that punishment that Paul has received, all of these things that have been inflicted on his body. And what he's saying, I think, is that when you look at me, you see what I've been through. My body is a manifestation of what I've suffered for Jesus. Now, I don't really think that whole description is exactly what Paul is talking about here. I think there's one item in there that probably is more pertinent than any of the others. If you remember, Galatia is where Paul went on his first missionary journey. He's going to have a problem at the midpoint of that journey, and Jews from another city are going to come and incite the crowd, and they're going to stone him. Then some Jews from Antioch and Iconium came and won the crowd over. They stoned Paul and dragged him outside the city, thinking he was dead. If you look at the map of the first missionary journey, you can see that, I don't know if this thing will work or not. Let's see. Not enough to tell. They're going to leave and sweep up. Their journey's going to take them all the way. Here is where Paul's going to suffer the stoning. So think about it for just a minute. He goes this entire journey through Galatia as a healthy man. And then when they get to Derbe, he's going to stop and go back after the stoning. And all of these people are going to see him again, literally before and after. I don't know exactly what the stoning would have involved, but I do know that Paul is stoned, dragged out of the city, and left for dead. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm going to guess that's going to have some impact on a human body. Paul's going to mention about the various damages that he's going to have inflicted in his life. Paul has literally, for these people, and they've witnessed these events. They've witnessed these scars that he has. He writes this beautiful treatise defending his apostleship in this epistle. And then at the very end, he rolls up his sleeve and says, look at my marks. The marks on my body prove what I'm saying. I bear the marks of Jesus. That gets us to the place that we probably are less than comfortable when we ask ourselves, well, what about me? What marks do I?
We'll use this one for a while. Again, you couldn't compare yourself to Paul. You wouldn't want to. That wouldn't be something that would be actually feasible. But if God has these apostles and these leaders who have their marks of physical bodily marks, what about us? What marks do you bear that prove that you're a Christian? How would somebody know that you're a Christian? We probably could say a number of different things about the reality of the marks and the various things that are going to be a part of our lives. What usually happens to us, though, is we begin to feel guilty. You know, I should be doing more. I should be making more sacrifices. I should be going to foreign places. I should be risking my life. And we go on this great big huge guilt trip. This morning, I don't want to go on a guilt trip. I'm going to try to stay away from the guilt. I think that we can think consciously, though, of what are my marks? You know, you can look at a human body. You can look at a person. And you can assume some things about that person by just by their bodily appearance. Are they happy? Are they sad? Have they experienced some form of trauma? Are they affluent? Are they very poor? Are they able to take care of themselves? All kinds of different assumptions can be made by looking at folks. And this morning, whether you want to believe it or not, there are people looking at you and they're trying to read the marks that demonstrate how you feel about Jesus. I get very, very frustrated by the TV preachers who try to present this idea that when you become a Christian, everything is going to be okay. Everything is going to be right in your life. Now, I believe that God gives us as Christians the resources to handle anything that comes our way, and ultimately through God's plan it turns out to be the right thing. But life doesn't just become just roses because we take that step. We are going to have difficulties as Christians. It's gonna happen. How do I know? The Bible tells me so. Philippians 1:29. For it has been granted to you on behalf of Christ not only to believe on him, it's been granted to you, it's been given to you, delivered, not only to believe on him, but also to suffer for him. How do you suffer as a Christian? We look historically and we see people who suffered in dramatic ways. We can even look around our world today and we see people who are being very oppressed and are experiencing an incredible amount of damage because of what they claim to believe. Sometimes as we experience life in our own world, we maybe step back just a little bit and say, well, maybe it won't happen to me. 2 Timothy 3 wipes that thought away. In fact, everyone who wants to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. It's gonna happen. There's gonna be a moment. There's gonna be a time. There's gonna be a situation where you're gonna have to stand up and that's gonna mark you. I know a couple of guys who about 20 years ago, they were working for a business. One of them was head of manufacturing. The other was a vice president of the company. They were bought out by they had been working under a conglomerate, and they were bought out by an individual person. And they were allowed, then while they were working for the big company, to have tremendous bonuses. There were great bonuses that were handed out. And the new guy came in, and he said, nothing's going to change. But at the end of the year, the bonuses weren't paid. And after a couple of years, the top-level people got really frustrated about that, and some of them quit and sued the man because he had made this promise. And he had made the promise in front of all of his executives. And so his executives were called as witnesses. And those men had to choose, what do I say? When they ask me, Did he make that promise? What am I going to say? And each of them knew that the men who said yes would lose their jobs. And these two men that I know stepped up to the witness stand and took the oath and said, yeah, he said that. And within 6 months, neither of them worked for the company any longer. There are times when we stand up for honesty. There are times when we show integrity. There are times when we defend biblical truths that have complications and consequences in our lives. And I would imagine that if we could just open the forum right now, that many of you could share events from your life, things that have caused you to experience those negative things. Now, let me make something perfectly clear here. We live in a wonderful moment in time. We live in a land where we have religious freedom. We live at a time when we have great financial resources, whether you believe that or not, we do. And this moment is a unique moment in time. In a lot of ways, some of the persecution that has been historically there and the persecution that goes on in other parts of the world, we're missing many elements of that. And God has given us this wonderful opportunity, and he expects us to take advantage of it. He expects us to utilize these talents and this freedom and these resources that he's placed within our hands. This is our moment. And we don't know when that window is going to close. It could close very quickly and very soon. Two passages from the book of Romans. Romans chapter 8, starting in verse 17. Now, if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ. If indeed we share in his sufferings, in order that we may also share in his glory. Must Jesus bear the cross alone and all the world go free? No, there's a cross for everyone. There's a cross for me, that song we sing in that song. How would it be fair that there would be no suffering for us, that everything would just be positive? What growth would come through that process? What progress would we make? And so as Christians, we share in Jesus' suffering. And then I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. What you're doing right now, if somebody's giving you a hard time, if financially you're struggling, if you're receiving insults, if somebody's attacking you because of your belief or because of who you are, because of your values, and that may feel very oppressive at this moment, but this passage is saying when you look back on it from the glories of heaven, you're going to say, that was nothing. That was nothing compared to what I'm experiencing right now. One other thing I'd like to point out, the marks that we bear on our body, they don't have to be bad. Paul is writing this in Galatians chapter 6. In Galatians chapter 5, just one chapter over, he writes about the fruits of the Spirit. Galatians 5, 22 and 23. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things, there is no law. Those are wonderful marks to carry. And there are people in this audience who carry those marks. When you get to know them, or maybe when you even first meet them, you see the manifestation of many of those kinds of qualities. And so we're not simply talking about the negative things that we experience. We're not simply talking about things that have physical consequences. We're also talking about those positive things as well. Those things that encourage other people. And those things that give resources to all of us. If you look at the first part of Galatians chapter 1, there's a passage there that creates a little debate about among scholars. In the first chapter, verse 10, am I now trying to win the approval of men or of God? Or am I trying to please men? Paul there says, if I were still trying to please men, I would not be a servant of Christ. And that sounds like a good heart commitment statement. But you can look at that statement in other places, and the argument is that the word there should be a stronger word than just servant. If I were still trying to please people, wouldn't I be Christ's slave? Or if you want to look at it, the New American Standard Version, it talks about his bond servant. It's a stronger phrase even than we translate it commonly. Paul says, I belong to him. I belong to Christ. And because I do, I bear these marks in my body. You can even go back to the original verse, Galatians chapter 6, verse 17. And you find people there arguing that that verse should be translated a little stronger as well. American Standard translates it, henceforth let no man trouble me, for I bear branded on my body the marks of Jesus. Paul is saying that as a slave, as a bondservant, the master has branded me. These marks have been placed upon me so that anybody who looks at me knows who I belong to. When Jack and Joyce lived in the northwest side of Houston, the lady who lived across the street, I believe her name was Irene, she had a tattoo. Middle-aged woman with a tattoo. She was different than most people, though, who have a tattoo. Because, first of all, this particular emblem was placed there against her will. And all it was a series of numbers. And on the inside forearm, her left arm, she had either five or six numbers, I don't remember which, that had been placed on her in Auschwitz. The Nazis had done that because they wanted to find a system where you could identify people both before and after death. They could keep up with their prisoners that way. Now, this isn't her, but the mark is very similar to that. Today, there are children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren who are having those same tattoos placed on their arms that their parents and ancestors have worn. The Nazis were saying, you're my prisoner, and I own you, and this is the number that I'm assigning to you. And the reality is, for all of us, there's come a time in our lives when, you know, Satan has done a similar thing to us. We didn't have it done against our will. We've chosen Satan. He's had out there these beautiful trains, and he invites us on board and says, everything's going to be wonderful. It's going to be fine. You're going to enjoy yourself. You're going to have an incredible experience. And we get there, and initially we do. But before we know it, the trains have turned to cattle cars. And we're on the way to his camp. And there we're tattooed with a number, and Satan declares, you are my prisoner, and I own you. And as that hurts, we speak to God. God, is there anything that can be done? And he says, yeah, there is. I've got something that will wash away that spot. What's that? Well, it's very expensive. I don't have anything. And he says, I'll pay it for you. I have the blood of my son who washes away that mark and makes you clean so that you're not Satan's prisoner any longer. And what I ask for you from you is that you live a life that's marked by me, by your behavior and in the choices you make. Titus chapter 3, verse 5. He saved us not because of righteous things we had done, but because of his mercy. He saved us through the washing of rebirth and renewal by the Holy Spirit. This morning, if you need to experience the washing of rebirth, to come in contact with Jesus' blood, we'd be glad to help you go through that process today. You may find yourself at a place where you say, I don't really have any things that cause me to stand out from other people in the world. Nobody would really recognize whether I'm a Christian or not. If that's true of you, then things need to be different in your life. And that may need to be dealt with in an entirely personal, private way. Whatever it is, deal with it. But if you have a need for a public response this morning, we'd be glad to help you as we sing this song.